Welcome to the Godspeed Institute, an enlightening and positive forum exploring all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems as an on-air classroom in an effort to help people better understand each other, promote tolerance, and foster peace. I'm your host, Kerr Hallenbeck. Ajit Kaur grew up in the beautiful mountains and forests of New Hampshire with parents who were immersed in the Sikh and Roman Catholic traditions. Her parents' deep connection to their spirituality was quickly shared by their daughter. Ajit's spiritual interests and path were formed early in life. Her love of healing through music began at a women's camp in New Mexico that Yogi Bhajan ran each summer. At the age of 11, she was so deeply moved by the way the music uplifted everyone that she decided there was nothing she would rather do than offer a healing vibration through sound. She turned her attention towards mantras, the poems of the Sikh gurus. Ajit began Kundalini yoga teacher training with her best friend when she was 16 years old. Today, she holds a degree in holistic psychology with a focus on counseling and is a certified wellness coach. Music and yoga have remained central in this process. She holds workshops and has a new CD coming out. Ajit, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for joining us today. Let's start with your journey, which is fascinating, and perhaps just at the beginning. Can you tell us a little about your household, where you grew up, and your parents?
Yeah, I grew up in a very spiritual family. My father was in a Catholic monastery, first in Michigan and then in Ireland, from the time he was 13 until he was 26. So very spiritual on that side. And then my mother was also raised Roman Catholic in New York City, but then met her spiritual teacher, who was a Sikh, when she was in her early 20s. So we had quite an abundance of spirituality, but kind of an eclectic mix. And my father actually left the monastery right before being ordained as a priest, so he kind of has a more open approach to spirituality and religion now. So my brother and I grew up with a lot of different kind of spiritual ideas, but definitely a lot of encouragement to explore our own spiritual paths.
You know, that happens a lot, people leaving the monastery just before they get ordained. I know several folks. I'm wondering, was there a particular tradition of monasticism that your father was involved in, Franciscan or Ignatian or?
You know, that's a good question. I'm actually not sure which order he was in.
Oh, I just ask because a lot of my work and background is on the saints, and I have a particular focus on St. Francis and a particular love for his relationship with Claire, St. Claire. And so just checking in there about that. Yeah. But that's a great foundation there for both your parents. Now, your mom, you mentioned, met a spiritual teacher, and that really affected her life going forward. Can you share a little about that?
Yeah, so his name was Yogi Bhajan, and he grew up in India and was a yogi. He was actually a master of Kundalini yoga by the time he was 16. So, you know, he was really a very enlightened, special person from a young age. And then he decided that all of these practices that were being used in these caves in India and were very secretive lineages, he really felt that the world needed those practices and that they should be shared openly, although that was really against the traditions. So he went around and he collected these practices and learned from all these teachers. And when he felt he had really gathered a lot of that wisdom, ancient wisdom, he came to the United States and to Canada and just began teaching openly all of these practices that had really been kept secret for their whole time before.
And these practices that had been kept secret, are we talking about a specific tradition here?
All of the practices are now within the lineage of Kundalini yoga. So that's the kind of yoga he taught. But they were different yogis. Each yogi would only be practicing one kriya or set of exercises or one meditation, and they would just be perfecting it, you know, in their cave in the Himalayas. And there would have been a lineage of yogis before who had all been working to perfect this one kriya. And Yogi Bhajan collected all those kriyas, and then he came here and he taught all of these different kriyas to anyone who wanted them. So it's really a mix of all different kind of precious ancient traditions that have been really perfected. And then we practice them exactly as they were taught because they were perfected over such a long period of time.
Well said. What a fascinating journey he made. Can you share a little bit about, was there any resistance that one person would just take all the secret practices and bring them to the West for everyone to know about and share? Do you know?
Yeah, there was definitely resistance. The kind of rumor was that if you taught any of these teachings that were supposed to be secret, if you taught any of them to people who weren't kind of prepared for them, that you would die within a year of teaching them. And Yogi Bhajan just wasn't very superstitious, and he just felt that in his heart he knew that the world was at a place and in a time that a lot of people could benefit from them. So he couldn't really imagine that there could be that kind of, you could call it negative karma. Mm. He didn't see that as creating any karma. He saw it as really being an offering.
That's a pretty severe warning, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Yes.
But apparently he survived.
Yes.
And so did the teachings. And now your mother became a follower of this yogi.
Yeah.
And can you share a little about how your parents then, her journey, may have affected yours?
Yeah, well, it definitely, both of my parents have affected my journey in a huge way. And, you know, in my teenage years, I probably tried to not be like my parents, but eventually I just realized how precious it was to have all of these different teachings all around me and really just began to immerse myself in them. So Yogi Bhajan was a Sikh, which is a dharma from India, a way of life, and is now a religion. So many people who practiced with him really just wanted to do everything that he was offering them because they were experiencing such a, you know, such a wonderful addition to their life through his presence and his teachings. So my mother became a Sikh, started living that lifestyle. And so I ended up really choosing that path for myself as well, towards the end of my teenage years, really committing to it and taking vows in it.
And now this is all happening as you're growing up in New Hampshire,
in the
mountains and forests of New Hampshire, as you say. Mm-hmm. Now, Sikhism is a mystical faith that developed in the Himalayas at a crossroads of Hindu and Sufi cultures. We've spoken with several believers, practitioners, scholars around the world about Sikhism in recent years. Can you please share some of the stories of from your experience of the faith?
Yeah, well, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is the Golden Temple in India as kind of an image of what this practice is, what this dharma is. You know, it's actually the fifth largest religion in the world, so it's pretty widespread, and a lot of people practice it in different ways. But there's always a huge emphasis on seva, which is selfless service, and really offering something to the community and to the world. There's also a huge emphasis on music and healing through the vibration of the sound current. So at the Golden Temple in India, which is kind of the, you could call it the Vatican of Sikhism, you know, it's really the central place. There, when you go there, you'll see there are hundreds of thousands of people being served free food all the time. They never ask anything from those people. They just serve them. People volunteer to make the food, and farmers donate the all of the food. And so people can always come to get food and clean water and to be healed and bathe in this sacred water that surrounds this golden temple. And there's constant music playing. So that's kind of the essence of this dharma, is that just serving each other and being generous, giving at least 10% of everything you make, giving that to others, and really having an open home and an open heart to serve. And again, the music is also a huge part of it. So I guess the first story that comes to mind to me is more an image of just being in that place and just being touched by that display of what this dharma is.
Thank you. Thank you, Ajit. Now, growing up, as you did, I also had two parents of different faiths. My mom was Catholic and my father was Jewish, and they decided not to raise me with anything and to let me make my own decision when I, you know, grew up or turned 18 and such. And even with the lack of, you know, sharing a lot of faith related information, I still wound up here, and I still wound up studying theology, and, you know, had a very spiritual tendency throughout my life. Now, just to get a picture, what kind of celebrations or holidays did you celebrate in your home? How did you celebrate spirituality?
Well, it sounds like my parents had kind of the opposite approach as your parents. They kind of celebrated everything with us. They really just loved those kind of community rituals. Both of my parents really appreciate that part of spirituality, and so they tried to surround us with, you know, we go to England every summer and spend the summer with in a school that a Jain monk started, and so we would take part in his practices, and then we would celebrate Christmas, and that was always a, you know, constant, consistent big part of my childhood, and Easter, but we'd also celebrate the Sikh holidays, like all of the different Sikh gurus. We celebrate their birthdays, and we'll go to Gurdwara, which is like kind of Sikh church, to celebrate those. So yeah, it was really a mix, just celebrating all of those different ways that people were finding a connection to God or to the divine, and not really seeing them as separate.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you for that. Now, can you share a little more about what you were drawn to regarding Sikhism and what you find in the celebration of Sikhism?
For me, it really wasn't a very conscious decision to follow this dharma. It was more just where kind of, I guess we all know that, that way that life leads us to the things that were unexpected. I guess for me, the biggest part of it was music. And when I was young, I experienced some of these musicians playing this devotional music, and I was just so moved by it, and also so moved by how much it affected the people who were hearing it, and how much it really was a healing gift to these people to experience this music. That was really my lead into it, and what I resonated with about it that my mother didn't necessarily. And so I realized, well, this might really be my own connection to it, that I'm not just feeling connected because of my family, but that this music is really, I want it in my life all the time, and I want to create that vibration. So yeah, I guess the music was the biggest part of it.
That's great. And, you know, I can relate to that, because very often it's the music that is bringing people, for example, into the Christian churches these days as well. There's a great focus on music these days, and the energy of music and what it, I guess, what it brings and what it helps people share in connection. Now, I love your video on YouTube featuring the song Long Time Sun, which I'd like to play today at the break. It has a beautiful and simple vision of connectedness between people. Can you share a little bit about the video? It's beautiful and simple, but very moving. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, I actually made that a couple of years ago with just a group of friends and my mother as well. We wanted to do a video of the celestial communication, which is a kind of meditation, movement meditation that goes along with musical songs. And so we made this video that could show people, kind of an instructional video, how to do this movement meditation along with the song. And we have people of all different ages part of it. Most of them are part of our yoga community in this area. And yeah, it was just a community collaboration to come together and do it. A very, as you said, very simple project. But it's been nice to see how, especially how many children have been practicing it from the video. But the song, The Long Time Sun, is actually sung at the end of every Kundalini yoga class. So Yogi Bhajan heard it at a music festival when he first arrived in the United States, and he said, you know, this song says exactly why I came here, that people here want to uplift each other. And so he just wanted to give them the tools to be able to really do that.
Mm, that's beautiful. Thank you. And the children in the video, they're just great. And the mother and child, it just captures something so graceful and loving, mm-hmm. As the arms connect, and then there's the next set of arms being raised mm-hmm. up. It's just beautiful. Before I go on, actually, I want to ask you something, if you don't mind, because I do think you might be the youngest guest we've had on the show. So you mentioned before you're young. May I ask how young?
Yeah, I'm 21.
I just think it's wonderful how you're so out there all over, you know, New mm-hmm. England, and doing your things and making use of, you know, the media we have today, mm-hmm. which is great to help you along. But you also have a clarity about you at, you know, for your a young age that seems like this has been your path for quite some time. And that, you know, you'd have dedicated yourself to this path of love and healing through music and yoga, and we'll get into that more in a little bit. In looking at the video, you know, it has a very inviting and embracing and inclusive feel to it, and Sikhism as a mystical faith of that's sort of came from the crossroads of different cultures tends to embrace different people's religious beliefs and such. Can you share a little bit about how Sikhism can help others?
I think mainly the way that Sikhism helps others is through people who resonate with that Dharma and are living that Dharma, doing a lot of seva. In that way, it does help others. But in terms of, you know, trying to say how someone might be helped by coming into Sikhism, as you said, the Sikh Dharma really honors every tradition and honors every path that people are taking to the divine. So I guess I can't really say anything trying to get anyone to join it, because that's really not the purpose. The purpose is really to just do whatever works best for you to connect to the divine. And if the practices of Sikh Dharma, you know, resonate with you, then by all means, you're always welcome to come to Gurdwara or to, you know, talk with any Sikh is always open to talk to you about how it could, what you could be part of. But yeah, it's really more of an honoring of each person's individual path that we're going for.
Thank you. Now, let's talk about your music and how you first realized that there was healing power in it.
Well, I don't know if you know Sanatan Kaur's music, but she's a wonderful Kundalini yogi and musician. And when I was about 11, I first heard her sing, and that was really a turning point for me. And I started singing at that point both Indian classical music and mantra music, and also singing Irish folk music and different folk traditions, and just really immersing myself in all different kind of more mystical and spiritual traditions that use singing. So then I just kept going and falling more and more in love with it, and have been, you know, studying it ever since, and just kind of amazed at how when I go deeper into my own meditation and then I sing, I know that it has such a different effect on the people who I'm with when I'm singing. If I'm coming from that place of feeling connected to the divine, it's really not about how it sounds. It's more that together, when we're in that meditative space and connected to the divine through the music, it really has a collective effect. And so that's what really is important to me, is having a really uplifting effect more than any kind of sound.
Now, can you share a little more about the healing vibration through sound, and whether this is where people connect, or whether this is healing physical body or spiritual body or both? What happens to you as you feel that vibration?
Well, these mantras that I use are just like the kriyas that I was telling you about from the yogis in the caves. You know, they've been perfected over thousands of years, and they're really special vibrations of people who were very incredible saints, and they spoke these words. And when we speak them, we are able to touch that vibration of that being and go into that same kind of collective consciousness that saint was in. So the idea with these mantras is to be able to really realize our infinity and really leave the personal space when we use the mantras. So for me, these ancient words are what have that effect, that collective effect of creating peace or relaxation or healing. It's really mostly in the science of the mantra. They call it Nad Yoga, the science of the mantra.
Thank you so much. I pulled together a project here in Maine some years ago called Sound Medicine, and explored sound from various traditions and even work sectors, and brought in folks who did the crystal singing bowl meditations, and brought in some doctors who use sound in their treatment, literally sound waves, you know, that bounce off something to help break it up or heal it. And someone who came in with a harp who plays in hospice situations at end of life. It was a very, very popular gathering that wound up needing to have a follow-up with more people.
Wow.
I think we're only beginning to learn the impact of sound and music on us. It's something so, it's just like a glorious, you know, universal, some kind of mathematics that just penetrates in a way that is larger than us, it feels. It's just larger than us.
Well, that just reminded me, Yogi Bhajan talked about it as the reason it was so important is because our bodies are so much created from water, so that then when the vibrations move through us, as you're saying, the vibrations can actually move through the water and break up those resistances. They can physically heal our bodies because of the way vibration moves through water. So it is very interesting.
You know, that is the first thing I've heard that actually addresses that directly, why that makes so much sense. That's true, isn't it? We are like 75% water, and sound travels right through us.
It does.
Isn't that something? Thank you for sharing that. That's very valuable information. I don't know if there's anything you can share or translate about one of the mantras as far as what they might be about, you know, what the words might be, if there's some simple way of sort of translating sharing what the mantra might be chanting.
Yeah, sure.
Great.
Well, Ekongkar is actually the kind of foundation of the whole Sikh religion and Dharma. And it's also one of our main mantras in Kundalini Yoga. It means all is one, is how it's often translated. So if you were to ask, what is the essence of Sikh Dharma, people would usually say Ek Onkar is really the essence of it. That's where it began. And Ek means one. Om is the creative force. And then Kar is the creation. So the creator and the creation are one. All is one. But we could go on and on. There are lots of mantras, but that's kind of the one that relates to all of these things we're talking about.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you for that, for sharing that. You're listening to the Godspeed Institute, a program dedicated to spiritually based living and religious tolerance. When we return from the break, we'll continue our conversation with musician and healer Ajit Kar. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Godspeed Institute. You're live with CARE, and we're speaking with Ajit Kar, a healer who works through the complementary use of music and yoga. And that was Ajit's rendition of the song Long Time Sun. Don't miss the lovely video on YouTube, which we'll post on our page later. Now, Ajit, let's come back to your music. How does it work in your life as a healer, and what are your hopes for your musical work?
Well, I would say it's in the hands of the divine. I never really planned on music being kind of central in my career. It was always just the thing that I loved and did whenever I could. But I actually, I just play whenever I was asked to, and I ended up getting a recording contract with Spirit Voyage Records, which is really a record company that's had a big impact on my own life, and their artists are very inspiring to me. So at the moment, I just finished making my first CD with them, and they do a lot of traveling and touring with their musicians and festivals. They have these great festivals called Satnam Fest, where we do a lot of yoga and music. So, I just am following the flow of it, and my hope is definitely just to continue traveling and playing music whenever I can and sharing this music that brings me such peace in my life and sharing some of that peace with anyone I can.
Now, can we talk about yoga and the spiritual role or purpose of yoga? I think sometimes here in the West, it might be considered more of an kind of an exercise class and not not necessarily in the fullness of the spiritual tool it is. Can you, 'cause I know you started training when you were 16. And and for those who may have just joined us, Ajit learned the healing power of music very young as well, at 11. And can you share with us your discovery of yoga and what it means to you, and more of the spiritual aspect of it?
Sure. Yoga does have a great impact on physical health, as you were saying, having it be kind of a fitness practice. And I actually was, my first real connection to it was through the body as well, because I had health issues as a child. And that was part of my journey into being so interested in healing, was through my own healing process. So I worked with my teacher, Guru Dave, who's a healer, and also would assign me Kundalini Yoga Kriyas to practice. So my mother always practiced Kundalini Yoga, but it really became my own practice when I started working with Guru Dave. Probably when I was about 10, I started working with him. And I would see him a few times a year, and he'd give me a different practice to do, and I'd do it through the year. And I really was able to heal myself through that practice. And then as time went on, it really stopped being, once my physical body was doing well, I realized that the benefits I was really getting from practicing every day were not physical. You know, they were really more the benefits of just feeling myself and feeling calm and relaxed in every, you know, throughout the day and throughout life and all of its changes and challenges. So that was really the biggest benefit.
What you just touched on there sounds like a very important story, actually. So I might ask you for some more details on that. You had health issues as a child. I don't know what they were, but were they something that traditional doctors could not address?
They could be addressed. I had, I did have some kind of mysterious things going on, but I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's disease, which is an autoimmune thyroid disorder. So that can be, you can take medication for it, but from the Western doctor's standpoint, there's all you can do is give your body more of the hormone that your thyroid is not giving because it's being attacked. But that doesn't actually stop your thyroid from being attacked by your immune system. So Guru Dave was able to, I still take my thyroid medication, I still do the Western side. But what Guru Dave was able to do was to help me, improve my symptoms that were still going to be there, even with the Western approach.
Thank you. That's very helpful. So you had a really good complementary approach that actually helped to boost your overall health and all your systems, and as well as the spiritual effect. What role does yoga play in your life now, and is it also related to the music?
It is definitely related to the music. In Kundalini Yoga, you were mentioning that a lot of yoga is kind of fitness-based. Kundalini Yoga is a very holistic approach. It has, it does have asana or physical posture, but it has a lot of mantra, sound, and making sounds and saying you know, chanting in it. We have meditation, a lot of pranayama or breath work. So it really accesses a lot of different ways of healing and ways of shifting the way that we feel. So for me now, I guess it kind of impacts every aspect of my life. It definitely helps me stay healthy and feeling good in my body, but it also is a huge part of my practice as a musician and as a healer. I wouldn't have a healing appointment with somebody without doing my own meditation and yoga practice that morning beforehand. It really allows me to be part of that healing process in a way that I actually don't feel is personally me as much as it is just being in the vibration of that healing energy of the yoga, the meditation, the mantra, and the lineage of these practices.
And when you are singing, when you're out, I don't want to say performing so much because it is more of a healing service that you do. Is yoga part of that as well? Do you sit in position as you sing?
I actually do like to bring a little bit in. I know that people are kind of planning on coming to hear music, and so I don't, you know, give them a full yoga set to do, but I always do at least one Kundalini yoga meditation as part of these kirtans that I'll do. And sometimes, you know, for one song, people will get up and into a yoga pose if it kind of goes along with the energy of that mantra we're using. So it really depends, but I always do include something from the yogic tradition.
Now, I'd like to discuss what your workshops and what you do. I know you recently had one up here in Camden, mm-hmm. And you, as I said, you go all over New England, it appears. Can you share about your workshops, what you offer?
Yeah, so I do a few different things. I do some week-long workshops at places like Kripalu. So, for example, this summer, my mother and I will be doing a workshop just for women, and we'll use the mantra, the Kundalini yoga, you know, lots of music and Kundalini yoga, but also I do wellness coaching, and so we use some of that as well, and it's really a integration of a lot of different tools, basically to just be able to have the space and the time to connect to yourself and really reset. Because as we know, there's so much going on all the time around us. And these workshops are really just, I see them as a way of creating the space for people to be with themselves and access what they already actually know.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. That kind of space is very important. And as I find coming at the, let's say, to the end of a retreat, it's really important to carry it with you too, as people leave.
Definitely.
And that tends to be the challenge these days because we can unplug, you know, for a weekend. And as soon as people get in their cars and start to drive away, you see the cell phone come out or the kind of plugging back into the different vibration, as you might call it, or frequency. Keeping that with us, you know, your attendees keeping it with them must be important, and I'm sure you've got some tips for that. Can you describe for a moment what attendees may find in your workshop, what they might learn or experience to take away?
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on the workshop. In my concerts, it's mostly, you know, we'll just play music and, as I said, do one meditation, and that's what I do the most of. Most of that traveling around is just playing music. And then in the yoga retreats that are usually more like a week-long retreat, we will do start every morning with yoga and a full yogic practice and then an hour of chanting meditation. And then throughout the day, we do a lot of work with art, visual art, and journaling, and just ways of using different modalities to access the wisdom that we have within, and create almost, like you were saying, how do we bring this out of the retreat and into our lives, we create kind of plans and visions of how to integrate that into our lives in a really realistic way, that people can leave the retreat knowing that every day they're going to do this practice, whatever it is, no matter how small or how big, that it's going to be there in their day, and they've already decided how they'll fit that in. So we try to make it really possible for people to carry it with them.
Thank you so much. Now, we still have time, and I wanted to ask if you had anything more that was important you wanted to share, any stories or just any particular passions you might want to speak about.
I guess the most important thing about all of this that we're talking about would be just to let people know that all of these teachings, as Yogi Bhajan shared and showed in his example, they're for everyone, and that this is really not a group of techniques that you have to, you might see a lot of people wearing turbans or, you know, looking really different who are practicing these things, and that is not at all required to receive the benefits from them. So I just like people to, you know, feel really welcome to go to a yoga class or, you know, listen to a mantra CD and just enjoy the benefits of that and know that there are no strings attached to enjoying what they have to offer. Mm. So I encourage people to take what works for them and enjoy it.
Oh, thank you so much, Ajit. As we come to the end of the interview, I just want listeners to know that all your website and contact information will be posted shortly at GodspeedInstitute.com, including the link to your video and to your workshop so people can follow you. Okay?
Great. I wanted to
thank you so much for being on the program today, and just the best of luck. I know you have a new CD coming out, too.
Yes, I do.
Right.
I'm very excited.
Oh, good. What is that called?
It's called Sacred Waters.
And is it music for people to be utilizing to, you know, to meditate with as well?
It is. The CD will actually come with, on the inside cover, there'll be meditation so that people can very easily know how they could use that to meditate with. And then you can also obviously just listen to it. Enjoy it that way.
Yes, it's lovely. Thank you so much, Ajit, and best of luck.
Thank you for having me.
Now, before we close the show, I'd like to share with you a tip for the spiritual tool belt you wrap around yourself each day. Our guest, Ajit Kaur, talked so much about music today and the importance of music that we shared that I wanted to follow up with a little bit of a commentary. And this is from my book, Saints in Love, and also in The Saint's Guide to Relationships. There's an African tradition of love songs so pure, the listener cannot tell if the singer is singing of a lover or of God. In our own tradition of popular music, Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water would be among them. The loving singer pledging to dry all the tears of the beloved, as God promises in the New Testament. Peter Gabriel's In Your Eyes would be among them, the singer considering the lover's eyes as a doorway to 1,000 churches. And the Bee Gees' How Deep Is Your Love praises the lover as a savior and a light in the darkness. Songs like these bring together and celebrate the categories of divine love and human love. They're also perennial favorites, and perhaps that should not be of great surprise. These are melodies that haunt the soul, lyrics that I would sing to my husband or to my children to comfort them, words I would hope the angels would wrap around my own heart in my hour of need. Music has this ability to create a sacred bridge between our worldly hands and our most exalted visions, combining math and sound in a way that penetrates the whole of our brain, subduing any division. At its truest, music is both human and divine. We cannot resist. Similarly, Christology, or the study of Jesus Christ, teaches us that the person of Jesus is fully human and fully divine. Well, of course he is. He's love. True love is fully human and fully divine. It creates, it heals, it forgives, it sustains, it illumines, and it carries hope. It is the bridge to peace. It is peace, uniting heaven and earth. And like God's grace, it is freely given to us, a blessing we can help make manifest here and now. This love is no different from the love in your marriage or for your children, your friends, or your colleagues. What may feel different in your life is how you spend your time. There's an adage, "He travels fastest who travels alone," and it may give the impression that fullness of spirituality is attainable only by monks or brothers and sisters or people who live in monastic retreats. That is, those who appear to be single or unattached, and not for those with a family to raise and never enough solitude or time. But the answer does not lie in time. Your life is holy, and your love is holy. Your breakfast rush, your kids on their way to school, your daily commute, your eyes made tired by the PC, your wondering about what dinner to make, your wondering about which bills to pay, your perpetual pile of waiting laundry, all holy and all a song. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for the Godspeed Institute today. The Godspeed Institute is an independent educational organization dedicated to promoting religious tolerance and spiritually based living. If you'd like to hear this or any of our previous programs again, or send it to someone, simply go to GodspeedInstitute.com. Please send your comments to info@GodspeedInstitute.com. We always enjoy hearing from you. And join us again as we continue to explore all the world's religions and spiritual belief systems. Until then, we wish you Godspeed on your journey.